Pickaxe.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Folks, welcome to Dungeons and Randomness. Since 2012, myself and an amazing cast of 18 have been telling stories in our homebrew world of Theria. Four different groups explore lost ruins, run for political office, rage against a mad king, set sail to long forgotten islands, and so much more. Every group has a different story and flavor, and every season or arc has a new set of groups and stories, all building the history of our world with every single session. Literally hundreds of hours of stories are waiting for you as part of the Pickaxe Network. Check out Dungeons and Randomness wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you around the table.
Welcome to the Hat Chat Podcast, episode 78, with your chill hosts today, Chris Trott.
Raw Zombie.
Alex Smith, that was John. John Wood.
John!
Woodboard?
John Woodburn.
Cockburn.
Woodburn. That was very nice. Woodburn. I like that. They sounded like some real instruments in there as well.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think we have a rule, you shouldn't be using real instruments.
Right. It's got to be done on an
digital
iPad
app.
Yeah.
Thanks, John Woodburn. That is not the first one they've sent to us. And it won't be the last. Right, John Woodburn? Because you're very good at it. Thank you. Right, while Ross struggles with his...
Sorry, he's loud. He's being loud.
He's being very loud today. Let's introduce the Hat Chat for anyone that hasn't listened to us before. What do we do here, Alex Smith? Why would they listen to three white men talk inane opinions about things?
We're a podcast that talks for about 40 minutes every Friday. We talk about some hypothetical things that our online user base has sent us, asked us. It gets pretty heavy sometimes. It can get pretty political. We're all pretty lefty, even though I don't really think it's very helpful to call oneself left or right anymore. If you're new to it, you'll probably notice that we're pretty lefty, whilst also being self-employed, entrepreneurial in some ways, living in the self-styled socialist shithole of Bristol. But come watch and listen to us. We put this on YouTube. We are in youtube.com/hatchatpodcast, is it?
Yeah.
It's also available ad-free. And if you support us on Patreon, you get to ask us questions via the hypothetical polls, and also have access to an ad-free version of this. It was also broadcast live on Twitch.tv/hatfilms every Friday from 2 p.m. UK time.
So much promo.
Yeah.
It's a lot of promo for something that they would have to listen to first.
Exactly. So
they might have tuned in,
but they may have just tuned in. You're right.
Yeah,
it's a great question.
A brief, like what we're talking about and why we do it. But the hypothetical is a big one. That's what we usually do the first half of our podcast about. So I go on Patreon. I put three options for crazy, thought-provoking, or silly questions that just get a conversation started, and then Patreon decides which ones are the best. And they have decided this week on the following, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, there's another addendum. And then me and Ross make it about Harry Potter somehow.
It always comes back around to Harry Potter.
But I think it's always important to try and find the funny. Sometimes we don't find the funny. And it gets dark and serious.
It does get dark.
And
but that's the question's
fault.
I try
to steer it to the funny. It's important to go that way.
It is.
True. In which case...
Patreon question number one. What is something popular now? But everyone will look back at 5 years from now and think is stupid and embarrassing.
NFTs?
I think so.
I think NFTs.
I don't know. I really still don't understand them enough.
Now, when you say NFTs,
really,
Non-fungible tokens in and of themselves are literally just a unique token, right? Sure. They don't have to be associated with this current trend, which is artwork is specifically an NFT, right? Yeah. And people are getting art and then they're claiming it as theirs. And that's mine because I've got the NFT non-fungible token associated with that. That's my art. I bought it. That's the current trend, absolutely, that I think is going to be embarrassing in 5 years from now when they spent like 50 grand on a pixelated
it
monkey.
Depends, yeah. Well, that's it. I just don't get it. I think that's it. Maybe in 5 years' time, it'll be really become really clear and really obvious, and it'll be, you know, every game we play. It's just like, but right now, it's a concept I don't fully understand or enjoy or like the idea of. But it seems like that it could die, it could pop. It's the bro culture around it, the crypto bro culture around, like, I don't know if you've seen, like,
I don't like the culture.
Guys. I bought my Bored Ape image. It's like, okay. Spent $5,000 on a JPEG. Yeah.
So I think the most sensible and most safe way to think about it, you know, without making some sweeping statement that'll make you look like an idiot in 5 years, as well. Yeah. There's always that risk. I think it's to say that it's become an asset class, you know, it's become a thing that you can spend money on, much like stocks and shares, much like crypto, although crypto also has the use of being a currency in and of itself rather than just its speculative value, even though the majority of people who hold crypto still are into it for its speculative value, i.e. how much you could potentially make in cash from holding it and selling it in the future. That's speculation. But they're not thinking of it as, I need this to make transactions, I need this to buy things, which is really the most important thing that crypto needs to do to make that leap from speculative to use. Anyway, and then other assets like gold and silver and things like that. Ultimately, people will always, I think, hold these and cash and, you know, dollars, pounds, things like that. We'll always hold these things in some form over the next, over the foreseeable future for me. You know, I'm talking like 20, 30 years. I think that people will hold those in different amounts. However, like with all of these things, it's about how much everyone trusts and believes in that asset, right? Whether or not everyone participates in, like, how much gold and silver is being bought and sold and held, how many pounds, how many dollars are being used, where are they existing, right? I think that crypto, gold and silver, and sterling and currency holds more value and can garner more belief than owning, than proving you can own a picture of a monkey, right? Like, because art, you know, art, portrait art and things like that is used as an asset and an investment. It's in the same way. And you could argue that NFTs are the same thing, but they are paintings that you are holding for future, you know, like a Monet or whatever. And in some ways, it's been used to say that. So, like, art, oh, this is a way to own digital art. This is a way to own the Monet of the future, the Picasso of the future. But like you say, it's mainly, but I don't think people have sold it. When crypto was starting to become a thing, people were excited about crypto. People were interested. People wanted to know more about it. The vast majority of people I've spoken to or heard about in NFTs are like, this is so dumb. And that's all it takes. You know, for example, gold and silver. Silver is used more in manufacturing than gold is, and platinum even more still, I think. However, people hear gold, they think gold. Gold has been historically trusted. You know, there's a cultural appreciation for that asset. So really, it's about making a good decision. And right now, I'm in the same boat as you guys. I think NFTs are a strange concept. I don't think they're going to be, in their current form, particularly popular. Like Trot says, if it gets used and adapted into something else, some other system using, maybe. So I don't want to write it off, but...
Yeah, the tech is good. Yeah.
The ape thing.
Yeah, the ape thing's dumb. Yeah, and I think
it's embarrassing.
Yeah, the NFT, like you say, it's damaging the value of what cryptocurrency could be by having essentially rich people like throwing around their money and claiming that they own a picture. I think that damages the idea of what cryptocurrency actually is, which is beyond just like, I own this image you could right click save as, and more about you can make transactions and have a ledger which proves you made that transaction happen, and it's decentralized, and on the surface of it, that's like not going through a government, is not going through a private company. It's proven to have happened by a network of ledgers and computers saying that, yes, this is a legit transaction, and it's non-trackable as well. Or is
decentralization is great. Yeah. Absolutely. Like decentralization, like, of things like this.
Are our governments going to allow cryptocurrency ultimately? Like, At the moment, there's control.
This is the thing. It's not. They have no control over it. They can say it's banned, as in you can stop purchases, I think. But then ultimately, you can stop mining, I think. In like China stopped it, I believe, and then they just moved all their servers elsewhere. So because it's decentralized, you can stop it. I think India are trying to stop it as well. I'm sure they'll try.
You could make it a crime to trade in it. But then, like Ross says, it's incredibly hard to track trades across networks. You'd have to have a level of surveillance, or admit to a level of surveillance, rather, because I'm almost certain, like I say, GCHQ, our home intelligence services, had and probably still do have a full tank monitoring system, as in every piece of information that flows through the major fiber optic networks of the UK goes through their servers. Now, that's a gigantic amount of information and very, very difficult to process. So there is still some anonymity in the crowd. However, it's... ultimately they'd have to admit to being able to spy on you beyond how they would monitor, a crypto network. They'd have to do it via your browser or through your phone, like working out what you're doing. And at that point, you need crypto. At that point, you need crypto because your government is so authoritarian.
This is the thing. This is what makes it so transparent what the government's agendas are, essentially, is look how quickly the uptake of digital currency was. Mm-hmm. It was super fast to get chip and pin, to make it as easy as possible to have traceable online purchases using your bank account, and make it as quick and easy as possible, like near field communication, just double tap on your phone. And every bank now has a digital version of your card so that you can do it easier than getting cash out, because we can't trace cash as easily. So put it all on your phone, have it all on a online bank account. In fact, let's let all these online banks exist, because we can trace them too, because they're just essentially like MasterCard versions of the same thing. They're all traceable, right? They're all trackable by the government. They know where all the money is going now, and it's a lot easier than ever to make small transactions using your phone, send someone something like bank transfer, than it is to get some money out of an ATM and then distribute without the government knowing where that money's going. So
you can track wallets, individual wallets, and the amounts that have gone in and out of them, but you can't. I don't know if it's easy to track who owns that wallet, right?
Yeah,
because there was a time there was a coin that literally rocketed, and some guy basically managed to turn what was $8,000 into $5 billion.
Oh my god.
And then they were like, holy shit, this account is loaded now. But also that's a risk, because that coin now has, one person has a all huge percentage of that specific token. And then when they started trying to take out tens of millions, they started tracing where that was coming from. But they don't know who did it. They can't necessarily ask an individual. But imagine that, $5 billion, and you're like, what the fuck? How you can't? And just trying to take that out would take a long time, and I think it would devalue by the time you actually manage to get out most of it. But just kind of taking out tens of millions. But
that's an example, though. Market. This is where you can't get too confused with the value of decentralization versus its role in a fairer society. It's not. It could be argued that it's not necessarily, has a role. Decentralization is great because it empowers. It doesn't really empower, but it doesn't empower the bad guys either. I think that's the most important thing about decentralization, is that it almost allows it to be unbiased. It allows it to be much harder to manipulate, and in a way democratizes it. But at the same time, market forces aren't really democratic. Like you're saying, in that situation where that person becomes the major holder of a currency, and ultimately if they cashed it all out or held on to all of it, they would have such a degree of sort of leverage and power over the rest of the market that they are, essentially the market or those who hold the coin are subservient in a way, or at the beck and, they could manipulate the price of the currency to impoverish people or whatever. There's all sorts of crazy things you could do in that situation. And because it's decentralized and because it doesn't have, bank level regulations or government level regulation, it can be abused because, like I say, market forces don't care about people. They aren't socialized constructs. Even if it's decentralized, it's not like a socialized construct. It's a still a wave that everyone's trying to ride, as an ocean everyone's trying to stay on top of. And so, yeah, these are other things to consider. And that's also the things to consider. Like, that's becoming more and more... It's really interesting, I think, really culturally interesting, because the left has always been associated with shit like this and like social ideas and like Silicon Valley and things like that, you know, very progressive, progression and progressive, you know, is the opposite to conservatism, you know, where, you know, they want to conserve traditions, they want to conserve things, they want to, that's what we think. But really, the left and progression and all that sort of stuff, taking massive risks and creating really strange new systems that we have no idea of the impact of. You know, social media, for example, is a great example of that. And so it is important to maintain a level head.
How quickly business can exploit it and actually make it a damaging thing.
It's
other
remarkable
thing about crypto, I think, which has, you know, current currency with going through a bank, there's a level of safety and protection that those banks offer. For example, you know, if something were to happen to my Lloyds bank account, some like weird transaction were to happen without my knowledge, the fraud team would stop it, try and block it automatically. And then I could also just call up somebody and say, I did not make that transaction and I can prove as so. And they can reinvest that money
back.
You lose
your ledger.
There's a level of protection. Yeah. Like, imagine, you know, everything is on you at this point with your wallet. Like, if you lose that or someone takes it somehow, that's it. Like, there is no one you can go to say, can I get reimbursed? Is there insurance for this? Or, you know, I guess there would be like third party insurance, like will protect your digital wallet or whatever and reimburse you the amount. But it's just going to be a bit of a wild west, I think, until there's some like proper structure on how to be safe with your crypto. I feel like it's going to be so easy to lose it.
Definitely. It's just like, imagine, like, I think I said this to a friend of mine who has quite a sizable amount of crypto. I said, well, what happens if you die suddenly? And like, you just have this anonymous kind of like account somewhere that no one has access to. You've just, that all that money is going nowhere else. So that's,
it loses
the other,
value.
That's the other issue with, I guess, redistribution of wealth is it's just gone. I don't know where
it's
true.
It doesn't redistribute.
It's just stuck in the system.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
So that's a concern, I guess.
That's but a really
I guess
good
if you
point.
If you alert your solicitor enough, we'll give them all the details, and that's what you would do anyway with other details, I guess you would give them. I've not actually made a will, so maybe I should.
Well, that's the thing. Like, there's still things in place where that money that you have would not just wither and die. There would be, like, the bank that owns that money would then have access to it in some form. But yeah, it is. There's a lot of flaws, and also obviously the environmental impact right now with the way cryptocurrency works. That's one of those big damaging opinions on crypto. As soon as people talk about crypto, it's like, oh, the thing that makes people's computers like run really hot and is damaging the environment, along with, is it those stupid monkey picture things that everyone's buying,
well,
like
the thing
JPEGs?
Is, there's a race, isn't there? There's a race to try and make something that's efficient. Rather than like the older coins, such as like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and stuff, like where they are high energy use, like they just are, the transactions, you know, it costs a lot. So when a coin comes out that's like actually going to be energy efficient as well, that's more interesting and probably more valuable. But I don't know.
I think so.
There's so many different cryptocurrencies out there as well. It's just a bloody minefield.
And they're all vying to be the next big thing.
NFTs just confuse me, but maybe I haven't read enough about them. But I feel like, it does right now seem odd just because the concept is quite laughable, just because it's like, well, everyone's like, oh, right click, I've got it as well. You spent $5,000 on it, lol. And it's just like,
even if that's not
maybe,
the truth.
Maybe it will grow to be this amazing thing, or be adapted to a usable format for the average person. But it's when there's games like FIFA saying they're going to start utilizing it. It's just like, God, imagine being a little kid and just like wanting a player and some fuckers bought it for like 10 grand or something. Like, what is the point in playing this game? Like, at that stage, you're just like, fuck this.
You basically put it in an auction house.
People are already
in every
like
game.
That with it as is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, it gets shit.
I think at the moment it's dangerous, and to like commit for a big company like EA to commit to something like in its current state to say that NFTs are the future and we're going to have NFTs in our or whatever is, I think, dangerous marketing. And also, they're clearly trying to exploit the profits to be made off of it. Like, it's very obvious why they're introducing such a thing into the game is not to have a better gaming experience for the end user. It's to like, oh, I see profit potential here, so I'm going to exploit the shit out of that and the user base. So,
yeah.
Pretty weird, well, isn't it?
Are there any other things that we think could be popular now? So I saw some people in chat saying TikTok, but I mean, it might survive the test. I mean, maybe the thing is, TikTok is all sorts of different things. It's not just the dancing. I mean, the dancing is pretty cringe at times, but like,
so I don't, I mean, shit anyway, on social media.
Exactly. Everything
and also,
becomes
if it encourages
cringe
people to get
time.
Active, I don't, honestly, I genuinely think that's not a bad idea. It just might look a bit stupid, or you might walk past someone doing it, like, well, that's fucking dumb to see in real life, but fuck it. But in 5 years, I don't, it might have adapted to be this mega platform. I mean, it's already huge.
It's huge.
It? It's one of the biggest platforms.
It's the platform right now. It's the biggest social media platform, I think, for younger generations at least.
So it's a case of them, growing further and adapting that more. I don't think necessarily that would be considered stupid and embarrassing.
I think
maybe
there's
some stuff that it's like YouTube. That you go back, there's people do stupid stuff
Harlem
and it's
Shake.
Embarrassing. But the content, the
stupid trends, will be embarrassing. There's a lot of TikTok trends which are embarrassing.
There are loads, and also some just there's always in the news like people getting banned from schools because of doing random TikTok things or challenges that just are dangerous or
burning the toilets.
Stupid.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Anything else?
I think that's just humans being stupid and having a platform to show the stupidity and getting praised for it. I think as long as that exists, it's not really the platform that's doing it. It's the fact that they got an audience. And are being praised for it and celebrated.
It's popular.
There's always going to be embarrassing, cringy shit in the human race because that's what we do. Especially
well,
as teenagers.
People spending like silly money on Pokemon cards as well. Is that like? But that's always been a thing, I guess. In terms
it's
of
the same
always been
stuff.
Like, it's the same kind of concept as the NFT thing and stuff. It's kind of like people have put a value to something, and then everyone's like, "Going, why have you spent so much on a piece of card?" But people put value to it, so yeah.
Do you think anti-vaxxing is going to be embarrassing in 5 years?
It's embarrassing now.
I'd like to think so.
Yes, it's embarrassing now. It's not something that's like now. It's shit now. I don't know what, because like my life is an embarrassment, so it's hard to say.
Your life is an embarrassment.
No. We do stupid shit
now,
in our videos. I do a lot of stupid shit in our videos, and I could say the next day that oh God, I could be embarrassed by that. But at the same time, I'm just like, there's nothing I find that embarrassing, really. It's just more like, well, it's not something I do. Each to their own.
Maybe so. Yeah, I don't know, really. Like, obviously things change over time, but I'm just trying to think of what's popular now. Because obviously,
I think our mindsets might change. I think that sometimes I think about the way that I thought about something a few years ago. And I mean, I don't mean necessarily like, you know, anti-problematic shit, you know, like, oh, I won't make those jokes anymore, you know, all that stuff. I mean, actually, perhaps even the other way, you know, like sometimes I overprocess and I overthink about things. And, you know, like I try to be too sensitive, or I try to be, I don't know, other shit. And then you're just like, man, no, I probably have really overthought this, or I really... You know, it's the classic thing of like trying to rep someone or something or an idea, and then you realize like that person or that idea doesn't need, you know, protecting or your say or your opinion. And then you feel afterwards, you're like, no, fuck no, of course not. Like, you know, it's almost like,
trying to do the right thing, but it's like going too hard.
Exactly.
On it.
Yeah, and then you realize a few years later, you're like, God, yeah, that was a bit much or something. Like, I think that. Everyone feels like that. That's just change. That's just progress. That's growth. I suppose.
If you're embarrassed in 5 years about something you did in the past, you have grown as a person.
Yeah, and, exactly.
Or at least society has moved away from the cringy thing that they were doing 5 years ago. They're no longer doing awkward TikTok dances. They've moved forward and have found a new thing to embarrass everyone with. So there is that.
Yeah, it's quite hard, especially when we talk all the time online. It must be hard. It's the one thing I worry about is like being hypocritical, which is it probably does happen. Where we say one thing and then, you know, do the other, or eventually you're actually on board with the idea. Like, you know, because I have crypto and stuff. I've never really slagged crypto off, but I think we have collectively. like either poo-pooed the idea, but then have also like when 2017 when we first kind of were introduced to it, we were like quite excited by the idea.
Yeah,
also,
we
once you learn more, you can kind of.
I was excited by
informed.
NFTs as well. I was talking about
the
like
idea
how
was interesting, wasn't it?
Art, this is like another revenue stream for artists that struggle in their field, and
it really could be used for that too. But like Ross says, it's just been picked up by like crypto bros who are just the most cringy motherfuckers in the world. And I'm glad that it's becoming recognized because I see quite a few of them on Twitter and stuff. And it's just like, oh God, this guy is really cringing me out.
And YouTube honestly, gaming. it's like constantly talking about it.
Yeah.
Whiz.
Yeah, he's ex Call of Duty pro.
Oh, yeah, I mean, people are moving to YouTube gaming. Well, big Twitch people are being bought off to move over there. But I find it such a hard platform to kind of jump into because I think if unless you're already subscribed to somebody, I just find it's just like a wall of so it's just a top list.
That's why
best of and it's I don't know.
That's why I originally got out of crypto when we originally got into 2017. Like. I was just a bit intimidated by it all. And I was like, I don't understand this enough to risk like what I'm doing.
Oh,
And nowadays I have a small amount of money in crypto, like, you know, I have a few hundred quid. And just because it's interesting to learn about, you know, like this other financial market, you know, like especially at our age where we were, well, these two have now already bought houses. But like, you know, you start thinking
always
about those
crypto.
Things and you start not, yeah. I mean, you, but you start engaging
bros.
More with like financial things, right? You know, like I think it's like the most likely time for a person to get into stock trading is like in their late 20s to early 30s. And that's especially nowadays with retail apps and things. I think it's just, personally something that's quite interesting at the moment.
Well, that's a good point about retail apps because like when we first tried to do it, it was a pain in the ass trying to even like buy any crypto. We were like going through various like websites and wallets and stuff, and it reminds me of the time Duncan lost a hard drive with 3 or 4 Bitcoin on.
Oh my
never
god,
never got that back.
Really?
That's just gone. Yeah, it might be more than that.
That hard drive is probably worth more.
Yeah, very tiny
car.
Amount of money.
That's so painful.
And that's like, yeah, that guy could buy a house.
And like Trot said earlier, that's the risks of crypto. That's the fucking risks of it. Like, it's
no one to call
lost.
Up to say, can I get like a new wallet, please? No, it's gone.
But going back to what we were saying about, and this kind of segues into the, have we had an ad break yet?
We should have one though.
Let's
it's
have
a great
one
time.
Now.
So okay. We'll see you in a moment. Obviously, if you're on Patreon, you won't get this ad. So we'll see you in a moment.
Hello, my friend. My name's Sean, and I want to end your suffering. No, not like that. With meditation in my new podcast, Mindfulness for Gamers. Each episode, I'll take you through how mindfulness can help you to feel less anxious and frustrated and put you on a path of happiness, all through the lovely, grimy lens of video games. So make time to level up your mental health and take the first step on your spiritual skill tree. Join me and subscribe to Mindfulness for Gamers right here, right now.
Welcome back. Sorry about that.
Welcome back.
That's fine.
It's a necessary evil.
The second hypothetical here is kind of something I want to blend into an idea that I had a minute ago.
Okay.
Are there any unwritten rules where you work? If so, what are they? And I say where you work, I suppose they mean like us. I presume
that's why
how
I put
we
it
work.
In. Yeah, because obviously I'm scrolling and trawling through the internet, looking for really interesting hypothetical questions to pose every week.
Right.
And this one came up, and I was like, "Yeah, maybe there are some unwritten rules of being a content creator slash influencer."
What happened to that giant list? Have we already exhausted those?
Oh, we've exhausted that. Yeah,
really?
Oh, wow.
It's
my
just
God.
Crap
I guess
ones left.
Two.
I'm looking for good ones or trying to get good ones.
What I wanted to say was earlier on, just before we went back onto the crypto, Ross was saying about like being a hypocrite, right? And like worried that you're a hypocrite. I mean, I think that in a way filters in with the old imposter syndrome as well. Is the other one? They kind of are bedfellows, I think, in a way. No, I was thinking sometimes I think about like how we think and how we see things, and you know, whether be they work related or life related or whatever, and I think especially because like we've during the pandemic we've been just like doing a lot of interacting with each other digitally, right? Like every day, like 3 hours a day at least, we're talking directly to each other, and not really direct as well, but you know what I mean, like we are essentially our outside experience of each other, right? So like we're, this is the social, the meeting your work friends or the whatever element of our life a lot of the time. And it makes me realize when I talk to other people, be it my family or friends or whatever, that we have quite a specific way of thinking and doing things that actually we all share, and actually isn't much like what a lot of people think sometimes, you know, as in like we all think, or I think we approach or see ideas or challenges in similar ways a lot of the time, which is what you'd expect from three people that have spent that amount of time interacting with each other. And it's kind of, do you notice that when you speak to people, other people or your family, or do you feel a bit like, I don't know,
it's very
strange
to think
sometimes.
I speak to other people, for one. but yeah, sometimes. But again, like, it's entirely the same in my opinion. Like when I speak to parents or like brother, they're in their little ecosystem that hasn't really shifted that much since I last spoke to them, and there is a level of difference there that I've come to accept, that they are willing to know as much about my opinions and things as they can be bothered to learn, and the rest they are not going to be bothered to try to understand. If that's what you mean, I'm not sure what you think, what you're trying to get at.
Do you mean as in like you talk differently to us
because like our opinions are leftist ways or
no, all the time, I think that because I've got used to understanding the way that you both interpret things, I expect other people to think like that more often than they do.
I think,
you know, like as in like I'll do or think a certain way about something and just expect other people around me to think like that. But
or like
really,
COVID or like,
yeah,
that sort
to
of
an
thing.
Extent. I mean, COVID's one of them, definitely, you know, like sometimes I have to think like, you know, how much am I letting this like oppress me, you know, because frankly, at the moment, in the last few years, I felt like I'm just waiting for it to be over in terms of like putting a lot of the bigger things off, you know, like you know, we're not doing our big trips, are we? We're not doing many of our, we've done quite a few good projects recently, to be fair. We've actually managed to get some stuff done, but
that's taken like, some time, you know, to get there though.
It feels you know, like we're still kind of in limbo a little bit.
Well, we went from daily content on the main channel, like every day doing stuff constantly, coming up with new ideas, creativity. Like that was, it's intense, but like it was a flow that we kind of got down to an art to a degree. We kind of got on with it and we cranked on. And then for that to just suddenly stop, and then there's a huge gap in between, a bit of uncertainty. Yeah, it's a bit odd. So yeah, it's knowing when to get into that same flow. Like we've done well with the Twitch stuff. I think that's kind of been a great safety blanket in that degree, but I do miss doing that other stuff because, yeah, like you say, like I don't know whether it's safe to go to a certain place, or like, is it going to be just bogged down by a lot of safety procedures because we just want to get on and do stuff, right?
Like how unsafe are we, you know, or how safe
know,
are
yeah.
we, you know? Like it's really hard to judge. You're like, because like and sometimes I
some
think
people
like,
don't
oh,
give a
shit.
At all.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's like sometimes I think, oh, that was a bit risky today. Like, oh man, I want to get out of this supermarket because it's super busy. You know, like I still think like that. Like I'm real. Whilst other people have, you know, been having to go to work on a fucking crowded bus every single day, and they've still managed to dodge it. You know, or like it hasn't affected them.
Polarization comes from because you're thinking like that and thinking, look at all these reckless people being so reckless and like they're just getting away with it, and then we're making assumptions about them, saying like they must be doubling down because every time they go out and not getting COVID, they're reinforcing their own beliefs that everything's fine, it's not as bad as everyone's making out to be. Whereas I imagine from their perspective, it's just a case of, look at these guys just like isolating themselves all the time, not doing anything. They are like withering away when they could be out here like rejoining society and enjoying themselves a bit more.
Yeah, like are we wasting?
They're already vaccinated. What are we worried about? Yeah.
Yeah, to be fair, because there's been points where I've been like, oh, like, you know, like in reality, it's almost like you kind of look at like a footballer's career in the sense of like, oh, how long do they, they're only active for a certain period of time. Like, is that the, yeah. We don't know. Like, I mean, obviously, yeah. you know, look at other creators. They do go on for a very long time, but it's just like, is that gap of time wasted?
Yeah, exactly.
We've tried to make the most of it where we can, but like, yeah, is there opportunities that we've missed out on because of it? But
oh, certainly.
Like we said before, it's kind of like we can't really linger on that as much as
no, it doesn't help.
My anxieties do linger on it. I don't want to think about that. And you just look to the future and be like, what can we do? And yeah, make it work. But I don't know if that's gone off the point of what you were originally saying.
No, I mean, no, it's good to like. That's interesting. Like, but, I think no, for sure. That is in part like. That is definitely an element of it. Like COVID's one thing. I think that is not all things. I think that like, I also think that, you know, I'm always trying to appreciate like how different, like we have things sometimes, you know, like like it's been almost 10 years now and just trying to remember
to a degree.
Huh?
Because when you're talking about your friends there and talking to them, I don't talk about what we do here. As in, because I just don't. It's a different way of working, right? It's a very strange.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's very bizarre. Like I don't know. People are sitting there watching us right now.
Exactly.
That's a strange thing to think about.
We have this strange life, and what I mean is like that essentially gives. Like we all have a certain lens, right? Everybody has a certain lens that they see life through, and that lens is shaped by their experiences. It's shaped by their obligations. It's shaped by their interests. You know, all these things. And like we have a strange lens, we have an unusual lens, I think, and that then changes your feelings about things, your ideas about things. It gives us like we have a lot of time to just think about things. I think like we have more time probably than we would have had working in a 9 to 5. And so like is, you know, how indulgent is my thinking is what I'm trying to get to. Like you know how like we like talking about crazy shit, we worry about certain things at the same rate, you know, like we all have similar feelings and concerns about similar issues, and then when you go and talk to people who've had a completely different life for the last 10 years or whatever and trying to see their concerns, their worries sometimes, I guess like going back to originally what you're saying about like, and this question, are there any unwritten rules? Like I think the unwritten rules are the way we think and the way that like our priorities, you know, and like,
well, we have an audience to consider, right? When we say stuff, we know that what we say has an impact on a group of people, and like obviously sometimes we'll speak our mind and stuff, but I think it's important to be careful about what you say online. You see people just saying whatever, I've got no filter, it doesn't matter. It's just like, I think you should have some filter. Like I mean, I think it's important to kind of think about what you're saying and know that it has an impact to people, and not be offensive for no good reason, or you know, a lot of what we do is supposed to be done in jest, and when we do say stuff that's outrageous, it's normally done in a jokey way.
Well,
and it's those are things we consider as an unwritten rule, right?
I wouldn't consider it active, though. I wouldn't consider us like constantly thinking, oh, should I say that in front of people or shouldn't I? It's more, it's become the way we are through just naturally being in front of an audience. We've mediated our the way we speak and the way we interact with each other and our audience over 10 years of just subconsciously considering like the responses we're getting and how we're reacting to each other is shaping the way we interact now. And also like that's probably made us a very unique lens on the world and our opinions, and when that suddenly is taken out of its little bubble of performing on camera to a YouTube audience or Twitch audience to interact with someone else that's done a 9 to 5 or has a regular quote mark job, or has a regular life, a different kind of career that's a bit more obvious, then you suddenly realize the stark contrast of the way we live. It's a privileged life, really.
Yeah.
But it's also a very, very indulged, like Smith says.
Yeah.
We've thought about everything and how to like not piss off as many people as we possibly can and take on board everyone's opinions, try and like figure out which opinions are correct and incorrect all the time. Mediate us, like, are we incorrect sometimes? And change that. When that's not most people's problems on a day-to-day, like them going to work and doing their job and coming back home again, they don't have to wrestle with that. But they have to wrestle with so many other problems, obviously, that I'm not saying that we got a hard job here, but we have a lot of philosophical conundrums on a daily basis about existence and how to interact with people online specifically. So it's not even like the real world, even. It's like talking to people through text chat with like all the tone and all the body language removed. You're taking a lot of like, it's a bizarre.
This is actually that's interesting. That is definitely something that I've spoken to friends and family about, like specifically about things like gender issues and things like that as well. You know, like the environment, like the online environment is, well, at least in the online elements of the online environment that we interact in. I know there are like many different communities within the online environment, but for me, at least the ones that I've seen us, we're very, like, we're trying to be, I would say, progressive. I mean, I'm not saying that, like, we're, like, the priests of woke or something like that, you know? But, like, you meet people who are genuinely going through stuff and you try to understand what they're going through, and then you're like, shit, no, human beings can... Like, I've learned something else about human beings and, like, what they can be. And like, for example, you know, like trans issues and stuff like that in LARP, in terms of people transitioning or people identifying differently. And it doesn't, it goes from being what a lot of people see as like a headline or an article about like, oh, woke mob trying to get rid of Christmas, to like, no, this is just a person that has a very complicated existence and they're trying to work that out in their own way, and they're just kind of asking you to give them a little bit of space whilst they do that, in the form of, you know, calling them a preferred pronoun or some shit like that, and you're just like, sure, like, that's no worries, and that's all it takes. And for me, that's quite nice. That's a bit of a gift to exist in a space like that. And it frustrates me when I have to talk to people who don't exist
everywhere, though. Yeah,
exactly. Who've never been through that. And I get it. And I'm like, yeah, I try to be patient. You know, like, you haven't had the time, or you haven't had the space or the correct friendships or whatever.
The endless free time that we have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Talking about it for 3 hours on a stream every day.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's the other unwritten rule as well. Like, in terms of, like, I think we agreed quite a while ago that it's quite easy to burn out. It really is, like, in this industry. We've been lucky to have, like a group of us to actually kind of discuss this stuff. There are people who just stop, will just stop making content because, it gets a bit much.
Yeah.
Whereas we're like, okay, because it goes back to, like, what is a normal job? What is a normal job, like, hours and stuff? And when someone's like, oh, man, you just do a 9-to-5. You should be making, you just stream all day long, do it, like, till whatever. And people don't really appreciate that. You talk to the same people for like 10 hours a day or something, you would go nuts, or you run out of things to talk about.
Yeah.
Like, so we try and keep it in hot burst. Well, I say burst. I mean, 3 hours is a good amount of time, I think. We try to keep it within a period of time that's reasonable for three people to keep things still interesting for the audience as well. So that's kind of an unwritten rule. Well, it's not really written anyway, but it's something
we're
that we definitely agreed on.
And
we've been like, that should work for us, because if we do too much, we're just either going to get just no content, because we cycle through the same conversations all the time. I mean, sometimes we try and make it different, but like, yeah, it happens. But you don't go 10 years talking to the same people without trying to, you know, keep it fresh. So yeah, that's one thing we try to do.
And there's the other tricky quandary I find, of our reward mechanism is also our job. I find that one tricky, where I'm like, I spent 3 hours playing games, and what do I fancy doing this evening, or what would I like to do this evening? Probably play this game. And so you kind of like,
find that game, because
money, exactly.
But and you're like, no, you have to have a separate,
a whole,
or,
of my,
like, I love this thing,
this
but
one.
I know I couldn't stream it, you know, like, I love this game, but I know it's nothing, it's not entertaining to watch or whatever, like that. Like, and that's really fucky, because everything you do, and then everything just has to be fun as well, you know, like, oh, I don't want to do that, it doesn't sound fun, and or worth lots of money, and you're just like, you it is hard. I find it hard, definitely, to like balance like reward and endeavor, you know, like that is tricky in what we do, really tricky. Yeah,
true.
But I mean, that's a whole other basket of questions. But yeah, when you do what you love, you don't work a day in your life. However, you don't work a day in your life.
But that, like, but yeah, there's a guilt attached to that as well. Like, we were talking about talking to friends and stuff. It's like, you don't really want, I'd like, you know, there were times when we were, you know, flying all over the place doing crazy stuff. And I just didn't talk to anyone about it, even my family. I just didn't.
You can't, can you?
And it's because it's just like, I feel like a dickhead talking about it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no stopping that. You just, like, who are you talking to? And so that's why it's good talking to you guys, because you shared experience and other people in the office as well. Yeah. It's like, it's good that we have a network. So I feel bad for anyone who literally does all of this stuff alone on their own. And then it's just like, probably a mental mess at the end of it. Like, let's be honest. Like, we've met some people who are a mess. And I think so that's contributed to it, where they've literally ridden on their own ego. And that's, that only goes so far.
Yeah.
So eventually they burn out, and then
you can literally build. They've got an money,
sure, but that's not.
That's not everything. Money is not everything.
Yeah, it's not. That you can tell. Like, it's the same ethos of like billionaires, where the higher you build your empire, the more you distance yourself from actual reality. Like, you can build an empire from a bedroom now, and have people revere you and worship you like some sort of deity, having never met any of them and having left the bedroom to enter the real world again. So imagine the sort of picture you could paint of like, well, everyone must love me, and I am like, I just ask for stuff and I get it, and I can buy whatever I want. That sort of person meeting someone else on the street that's like trying to just live on a day-to-day basis, living by the monthly paychecks. Yeah. In a few years of just being isolated in a bedroom having COVID, but like gaining 2 million subs of people that love you, it'd be a huge disconnect from reality, I think. So we kind of kept ourselves in check, but there's still, like you say, we've crafted a unique lens for ourselves in these 10 years of being content creators. And sometimes you see that when you speak to regular people.
Ego is everywhere in this industry, and it's just sickening and boring at this stage, like being some people who just clearly aren't down to earth. And when you do meet someone down to earth, it's really refreshing and nice. It's like, oh man, this person's not what I expect them to be. This is really nice. I'm glad that they haven't let it affect them. And it's quite rare, to be honest, like from our experience, but that is refreshing and nice. And it's a weird one. It's a very strange world.
It's an ongoing process as well. As we're getting older, we change and we bring on new opinions, and our thoughts change as we go. So we kind of have to like rethink things on a daily basis or on a monthly basis of like, is everything, what's happening? What's our next steps? But we've figured it out for 10 years so far, plus. Doing all right.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. So thanks, everybody, for supporting us. Thanks today for listening to this podcast. Our patrons in particular, we thank you for making this a weekly occurrence now. It's been very fun to do it every week, actually. I think we've been doing well. Trot's been doing well, sending out the hypotheticals and stuff, and keeping us all together. Ross has been putting it together afterwards and stuff. It's been very good. So thank you very much for everyone for supporting this. We are going to be back on Monday on the Jingle Jam live stream.
We're recording this in the midst of a charity drive.
Doing a charity drive. What time are we starting on Monday? Do you guys know?
5
p.m. I think it starts at 5, but we'll want to get
there
just to set everything up.
We're going 5 to 11? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, that's the normal time. And obviously, if it overruns a little bit, that's normally fine.
Okay,
heard since, but there might be an appearance from the Longest Johns.
I haven't heard anything about that. I guess we'll see. We'll find out at the time. Yeah. But otherwise, we'll make it work with the stuff we've got.
So if you're listening later than December 6th, check that out on, I guess, a Jingle Jam highlights or something at some point.
We'll put it on our channel as well.
Excellent. Well, I'll leave you with John Woodburn's Full Fingal. And until next week, have a good one. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.